I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Give it to me. Oh, hello, everyone. I'm Molly Wood.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
Welcome to It's a Thing, the weekly podcast supported by all of you, where we carefully analyze the hottest trends. We use our little eagle eyes to spot the newest happenings and the things that are a thing, with our obviously not yet patented scientific method of either seeing what my kid is up to or going on a business trip.
I use calipers and flagons and all manner of scientific instruments. And then I look at Twitter.
Uh-huh.
That's where both of mine came from today, as a matter of fact.
Mine came from a catalog and personal obsession.
One of them,
the first one. And then the second one came from stuff my kid is doing.
Yeah, that's a built-in advantage right there.
It really
You've
is.
You've got the local trend factory at your disposal. That's
it
great.
It is very useful. Very useful.
You know, I thought I might come up with something because Eileen was watching a romantic comedy on Netflix starring Jane the Virgin. What's her name? The actress.
America Ferrera. Is that her?
The star of Jane
Wrong
the Virgin?
Show. I don't know what show that is. I've never watched it.
Anyway, it was, young people doing young people things. I'm like, oh, I will see trends now. Nothing new.
I will spot a thing. That's because young people are only recycling our things.
Also, possibly. Also, Netflix made the, the people who made the movie from Netflix weren't necessarily young. Mm-hmm. Although I think she directed it, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, I didn't say anything new. Maybe they were just trying to appeal to older audience as well,
but including
us.
You have things in here, though.
I do. And my first thing is thanks to a bunch of Canadians. Mm. I'm headed up to Toronto for the Marshall McLuhan Variety Hour podcast roundtables, which I've been wanting to go to for a long time. Looking forward to it. A lot of great Canadian podcasters will be showing up there. And in their sort of direct message thread on Twitter, where everybody's kind of saying like, oh, do you have your hotel room? Where are you staying? Et cetera, et cetera. Suddenly everyone was talking about butter tarts.
Okay.
Do you know what butter tarts
nope,
are?
I've never heard of a butter tart,
but I clicked your link and I want some. They are beigey little pastries.
don't start with beigey. Come on.
I'm gonna. They beigey. Are beigey little pastries with a soupy interior. And apparently they're delicious.
I see. So you were going with
butter.
Uber disgusting sounding on purpose.
Yeah. No, the more proper description would be a handheld pie with a flaky crust and a sweet gooey filling. Is that better?
Mm-mm. However, you're right, though, that apparently they are considered the ugliest of desserts, according to this link you put at chatelaine.com. They look kind of ugly. And they look like, if I saw one at a party on a little appetizer table, I'd be like, ew, it's one of those gross mushroom things from Trader Joe's.
Right. They do not look like they're even sweet, but apparently they are all the rage. In fact, this Chatelaine article says, step down Nanaimo bars, butter tarts are the ultimate Canadian dessert.
Oh, those are fighting words.
Uh-huh.
Didn't we somewhat recently decide that hand pies actually were a thing? Like, are
yes,
these
we
like
did.
A...
I believe we did, yeah.
Are these in that category? I guess they're handheld.
I don't know if we did it on the show proper or in the pre-show, but we definitely have been talking about ham pies.
This looks delicious. Are you going to, I mean, you know now what has to happen, which is that when you go there, you have to get one and like record yourself eating it.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I have been promised butter tarts. I told Dave the psychologist that I will immediately, because they said butter tarts were essentially Canadian currency now. And I said, well, when I get to the airport, I'm going right up to Thomas Cook and demanding butter tarts in French.
Je demande. It looks delicious.
Dave said, please live stream that.
Je demande butter tarte.
But yeah, I expect to have butter tarts when I arrive.
There are butter tart trails. Because apparently it started in 1931. You can go on the Butter Tarts and Buggies tour. in Wellington, North County in Ontario.
I did not see that part.
It highlights the area's Mennonite heritage. And then there is a competing tour called the Butter Tart Tour, which has about 50 participating butter tart bakeries. If you stop at all 50, can you do this? Can this be like a special episode? I want you to go on a butter tart tour.
I could try to extend my trip or convince the entire podcasting community of Hamilton, Ontario to go on a butter tart tour. I don't know that it would take that much convincing, honestly.
I was going to say, this doesn't seem like a hard sell
at all. Uh-huh. No.
There's the Kawartha butter tart. I'm way down the butter tart rabbit hole right now.
Oh, yeah. No, butter tarts, my friends.
Oh, my God. This is amazing. I want a butter tart. I want to come to Ontario.
Oh, come on. It's in July.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, then let's discuss.
There's time to plan.
Let's see. My thing. So my highbrow thing, because I brought a highbrow thing last week with the wine glasses. But I am excited about this.
I've just put my glasses towards the end of my nose.
Oh, good.
Please continue.
Good. Yes, because it's time for design culture. I am a big fan of this French artist, Yves Klein. He was very famous in the 60s, or he came up in the 60s. And he is known for a couple of things. One, well, he actually is interestingly the first artist to essentially Photoshop something. He created this image called The Falling Man. And it was, as far as I know, one of the first known images that basically did he had this man jump onto a giant mattress. And then he used, sort of state of the art at that time, paper photography manipulation to take out the mattress. So it looks like the man's just falling. Right. And I fell in love with Yves Klein at the San Francisco MoMA. God, this is like unbearable.
When did Yves Klein first speak to you, Molly?
He first spoke to me. So I'm walking along in the San Francisco MoMA right after it was remodeled.
Sorry, we have to talk in our NPR voices now.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And as I'm touring the museum, I pass by this beautiful rectangle of the most spectacular and stunning blue you've ever seen in your life. And it's apparently, so it was called Blue Monochrome. He painted it in 1961. And it's literally just like a big blue rectangle, but it's in this color, blue monochrome, that's actually, he patented it. It's called International Yves Klein Blue.
Oh, so yeah, and you can do that with colors. You can say like, this is, I've created this color, and a patent doesn't last forever, so it doesn't mean that you own the color forever. But if you're like, hey, this color hasn't been used before, I figured out how to create it.
International Klein Blue. Yeah. Okay, nice. So all of that, and so I bought, a crappy reproduction that's printed on wood. It's beautiful. I love it. Like, I have two Yves Klein prints in my house. I love it. Turns out, now, all of a sudden, Yves Klein is becoming a thing.
Ah, and what's driving that? Did he get into Target or something?
To prove it. Yeah, I don't know. Well, okay, one thing that's driving it is that to celebrate the 90th anniversary of his birth in March of this year, I can't believe I missed this, they released the paint. French paint manufacturer Resource partnered with his family, Yves Klein Archives, and they have released a pigment, like a paint that's called International Klein Blue. So you could actually paint your stuff.
I'm sure you could have already got, because the patent would have expired by now, but I bet they couldn't call it Yves Klein Blue, right?
Probably,
The two appeals here is this comes approved by the estate, and it can legally be called Yves Klein Blue without being a trademark.
You're so funny with your patent thing. Anyway, I have no idea if the patent had expired or not, but I do know that
I'm assuming if it's 90 years since,
It's this like ultimate, I don't know, yeah.
They're only 14 years for the patents, I think.
Okay.
In the U.S. anyway.
Okay. Anyway, what's awesome about it? So that's all exciting. And it's possible that this was inspired by that. But then I got I get the CB2 catalog, Crate and Barrel 2, which is like their little modern spinoff.
Yeah, right. We've got some stuff from CB2.
And they have a whole full page ad for French blue planters inspired by a shade first mixed by artist Yves Klein.
Ah, clever.
And they're in this beautiful, I know. And then I was reading about this big design book that's coming out, and it has 400 of the most amazing rooms ever designed, and evidently one of them is an Yves Klein room. And I'm just like, dude, other than the fact that art people obviously know all about Yves Klein, I had never heard anyone talk about him. And to have it show up in CB2, I was like, oh, that's a thing. Also, I want the paint.
One of the things that we have to deal with on this show Molly and I both, is adapting for the Flynn effect, which I recently just started to remember is what it's called when you learn a new word and you see it everywhere.
Hmm.
And one of the ways you tell is the thing I'm seeing just a reference to it, or is it a new reference to it? And all the ones you're talking about are new references.
The Flynn effect actually is that IQ thing that we learned.
Oh, wait. Did mm-hmm. I get it wrong?
Some other effect.
What's the Flynn effect?
The Flynn effect is the thing where every generation is smarter than the one that came before.
See, if I were younger, I would have known that.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyway, whatever the name is for that thing.
I misremembered as the Flynn effect. It's that because these are not like just references like, oh, I guess I'm seeing Eve Klein everywhere. These are like, there is a new paint where there is a new product.
Right. Totally. Yeah. It is a thing. However, I will say, if I could just have blue monochrome. And then what's so awesome is that when I saw it, by the way, blue monochrome is considered, quote, priceless. Like, you can't, nobody, you know. He's got one painting called International Klein Blue, or IKB1.
Oh, the actual painting. I was going to say, actually, apparently it's $100 per liter, but you mean the actual.
Yeah, I mean the painting.
Right,
IKB1, painted in 1960, is another monochrome. In that color, it sold for $17,400,000. I'm not gonna lie, I'm not the world's biggest art person, but when I saw this color, just this block of mm-hmm. color hanging in the MoMA, I stopped cold. Like, I stopped dead, and I was like transported to this time that I went to Corsica, and I was like looking out the window of this 1,000-year-old castle at the Mediterranean, and it's inspired by the Mediterranean. Like, it just does it for me.
Well, and that's the thing that a lot of people who, you know, dismiss art are like, I could have painted a square blue thing and put it on a wall, right? Like, that would be the sort of lazy critique, to which my response is often like, yeah, but you didn't. You know, part of art is doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other part is, and would anyone have cared, right? And your reaction is why this is such a famous piece of art.
Yep. And color. And just a color. Also, apparently he was he only lived 34 years, but he was a world-class trained, world-class Japanese trained judo master by 26.
Oh, man.
And he essentially really did help sort of lay the groundwork for pop art. Like, he really changed the art world in a lot of ways.
Eve Klein.
And I want the paint. The
it's
end.
About time.
It's about time, Eve, that you got your due.
Good for you.
Your $17 million paintings. People are like, mm-hmm. Welcome to the party.
He only lived to 34. That's just frightening.
I know. Your turn.
All right. So there was an excellent thread, just as a side note, from Grumpwitch, 21st Century Gorgon on Twitter, about working in libraries. And it's just a great thread that I would recommend people go and read just to get an appreciation for what librarians do for all of us in society. But one of the first things in the thread is things I have learned about the general public while working at the library. Number one, a huge number of people under 20 can't read face clocks, having grown up with only digital ones.
Hmm.
And I retweeted this and somebody responded that they also have like younger family members, some of them whom are even older than 20, who can't read face clocks, who are like, yeah, I never learned. It's just, we always had digital around.
What? Wow.
So again, this is one of those things where you can easily say like, well, I know someone under 20 who can read a face clock just fine. But I think it's a trend. This is a librarian who's around the public a lot and is seeing this over and over.
Mm-hmm.
It shows that like face clocks, you know, this may be a magna trend, right? Not a fast moving one, but face clocks are going to be seen as, you know, Roman numerals at some point. Like, why would, and a lot of face clocks have Roman numerals on them, which makes them doubly befuddling.
Which is not helping.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be, they're going to be iconoclastic. They're going to be a thing that, and I think they're getting very close to that right now, where like you do it for decorative purposes, not for usefulness.
That's really funny, actually, because the reason that I get the CB2 catalog is because I bought this like huge, like absurdly oversized modern face clock that has no numbers on it, no, like, you know, just the big hand and the little hand, and they're almost the same size. And literally, people come into my house and they're just like, I can't. I don't know.
Because there's no numbers
says.
On it.
Yeah, they're just like, I have no idea what that says.
But why did you buy it? You didn't buy it to.
It's beautiful. Also, to know what time it is, vaguely. No, I mean, yeah, I did. I was like, I need vaguely, a big clock in my, you know, front room because there's no clock in there.
But that's so not the one you're looking at when you're getting ready in the morning. You're like, is it 9 yet or whatever?
Right. Yeah. No, God, yeah. No. That morning routine is down to the minute. This is more like, it's roughly 10, it's time to go to bed.
We have the same thing in our living room. We have a big, It's gaudy. I'll be honest. It's a big gold sun kind of thing.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's a look.
And it came from a set at a production that Eileen was working on. She's like, hey, you know, our clock broke here. We can replace it with this. And you can't really see the numbers. They're on there, but it's kind of so dark sometimes. But it doesn't matter. You can tell, again, approximately where the hands are. And, you know, like, oh, I guess it's getting close to 10. All right. Yeah.
Yep. Also, oh, my goodness. May I back up for a moment and just say that producer Rich found a link at domino.com saying that Yves Klein blue is, in fact, the color du jour and having a moment in 2019.
What?
And this is from March. Oh, my gosh. I feel like a genius. Anyway.
Credit to Rich. I just noticed this. The Bader-Meinhof phenomenon was what I was trying to think of.
Oh,
Bader-Meinhof.
That guy is on it.
Thank you, Rich.
Let's see. My second thing, interestingly, also comes from the youngins. What a shame about the face clocks, too, because they've all got their dumb Apple Watches and they just are like not knowing how to tell time. I actually have had this in the bullpen, or at least my mental bullpen, for a while. And now I'm kind of bummed that I didn't say it because somebody wrote the story about it. But I've noticed that the use of the term default has become the new basic. Like, it's sort of an insult. It's an insulting term.
I mean, I feel like I just learned your basic from The Good Place myself. So I'm just catching up. Thank you for giving me a leg up here.
Hey, no problem. Yeah. Now you're on to the next one.
Yeah.
Which is default. So, and default comes from, for those of you who don't play Fortnite or are not blessed with a child who only wants to do that all the time. Side note, though, Minecraft, weirdly back among the older set.
Oh, Minecraft's having its second wind. Warcraft did the same thing, if I recall correctly.
So did Pokemon Go. Which might even arguably be having a third wind.
Well, with Pokemon
Go,
it was a deep pull. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so Minecraft is back, but so in Fortnite, when you play, you start out with a default skin, and then Fortnite does everything it can within its little video game design powers to get you to pay money for cooler skins.
That's how they make their money.
And that's just like a huge, you know, and there's one all the time, and there's like special ones and rare ones and this and that and what. But apparently, and because some of them are rare, and because some of them can only be achieved either with a lot of money or by like finishing a season, it can suggest that you have more skills if you have cooler skins. And therefore, so this is all the long etymology of how the word default has become an insult. It means you're like a noob. It's the new noob.
So how do you use it in a sentence?
Stop being so default. Like, you're totally playing like a default. Nice outfit.
Such a default.
Nice outfit. What are you, a default? And then, of course, that has led to like a whole bunch of thought pieces about how calling people default is like, you know, leading, it's bullying and harassment. There was a long piece
That's the evolution of language over and over and over again, is you take a word and you start to use it to mean something mean, and then eventually it's used for harassment, right?
That's kind of what I thought. Like, it's true.
Yeah, it's not.
But previously, you would have just been called a noob in all the annoying ways, you know?
And before that, a dork, you know? Like, the words keep evolving because the kids always want their own words.
Yeah.
Except for cool. Is cool still... Like, it's still going, right?
Only if you say cool, cool, cool. I don't know why, but it's okay to say cool, cool, cool.
Well, that's from Community, so...
Maybe you're right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But I think if you just said regular old cool, you would be a default.
So cool is dying then, maybe.
It may be.
I mean, because cool was old when I was young, right? The idea that cool still worked when I was in elementary school or even high school... it's kind of crazy because that was a 60s word.
Interestingly, I think that you can describe something as cool if, that's for example, you are in the Atlantic or the New Yorker. Like you can say, you know, Aleli May, the woman who designed those cool Jordans that I bought. Oh, I said it.
There you go. Yeah.
You could say she's ineffably, effortlessly cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you can describe it as a, as an attribute.
Yeah.
But I think for me to say, as I so often do, cool, I'll see you there at 5, is kind of old lady talk. little bit default, perhaps.
So cool's morphing, which I guess it always has.
Yeah. They all always have. But anyway, yes, if somebody calls you a default, it's the new noob, and it's harassing you.
Don't call someone default.
Yep. They don't call each other losers. They just say, he's a default.
I am reappropriating Basic.
Basic is excellent. Basic has definitely not gone anywhere. It's not old.
No, I'm empowering it. I'm gonna turn it around. What's that called? When you take an insult against you and then you make it your badge of honor.
You're gonna repurpose it. You're gonna take back your time, reclaim your time.
Yeah.
All boom. Of that. Get it.
Because I'm Basic. I don't know. I don't think I really am.
No, man. Don't be so down on yourself. You sound kind of tired.
You're no default.
You're stressing.
No, I was trying to. Never mind. We will move off of Basic because it would be default to stay on it.
Well played. All right, let's let you guys talk for a minute. I think even though I still have like 40 ounces of pea milk in the fridge, holy bananas! 40 ounces of pea milk just became my new rap album title, yeah. Like without a doubt. Anyway, I still have 40 ounces of pea milk, so I think we can do at least one more email on the topic. Thomas wrote in and said, I just listened to the show and found it funny that the milk alternative world was so new to you California guys. I've been a strict vegetarian since the 80s and I'm dairy free. I have tried all the possible options for a milk substitute for my morning coffee. For years, I was using soy milk, and then I decided I needed to cut down on my soy intake, which I've also heard, and started the long and sometimes gross journey into milk replacements. Here's what I found. Wildwood soy milk, 10, gets 10 out of 10. Smooth, very nice, not grainy. Ripple pea milk, 8, not bad, but odd, newish category. Flax milk, 4. Hemp milk, 2. Oat milk, 8. Coconut milk, 5, very oily and coffee. Almond milk, 6.
I like hemp milk's description, like drinking the bottom of someone else's granola cereal bowl.
Ew! That's disgusting and hilarious. Yeah. And then he says, Wildwood also, FYI, makes a super firm tofu that is the bomb for grilling, and you don't have to drain it. Okay, that's actually pretty awesome.
That's pretty great.
Yep. And he said, if you ever need any help in the alternate food world, just ask. Plus, are mirrored sunglasses a thing? I would say never not a thing.
Yeah. Those aren't newly a thing.
Perma.
They're sort of they're like cool. They're just cool. Long-term thing.
Yep.
I think they have a sine wave, right? Where they get a little more prevalent for a while and then they dip down. And that's true.
And actually, to be fair, I have seen a bit of a super mirrored look. Like a really, really shiny mirrored sunglasses. That might be a thing. You may be correct.
Been a fan since BOL and Always On. Always On fan.
Dang, that's old school.
I was just using my Always On pint glass the other day.
good times.
The battery doesn't work in it, but it used to light up.
You guys. Yeah. Like, we had good swag for that show.
Yeah, it was good. Good stuff. And then Kevin writes in and says, I think the hockey versus basketball popularity is very much a regional thing. Mm-hmm. I recently had a very similar yet opposite experience to Tom here in Pittsburgh. Someone saw my son wearing a Warriors hoodie and expressed his surprise to me that there was someone else in the area that followed the NBA.
Well, what? Wow. I mean, Pittsburgh, that's a hockey town. I'll tell you what.
Well, because the 76ers are in Philadelphia. There's no NBA team in Pittsburgh. I'm not wrong, right?
Right. No, you're not. So, and the Penguins.
Pittsburgh is like,
and the Penguins are in Pittsburgh. I mean, it's a hockey town.
That Penguins are hot. Good.
A million years ago when I worked Sidney for the Crosby. Associated Press, I like came so close to getting a job in Pittsburgh covering the Penguins. And I think they were just like, nah, girl, you can't handle it.
You can't handle the puck.
You can't handle the Pens.
Well, cool. All right. Thank you, Kevin. Okay. Appreciate that.
You got a little support. At least one person I saw on Twitter too was like, hockey is totally a thing.
Well, so would say a hockey fan. I'll admit that really, really quickly.
Too true.
I was just struck by that. And I had the experience. I like Kevin's email because he's like, I had this experience with basketball.
I was in
an area where I didn't think that many people cared. And all of a sudden, like, wow, a bunch of people care. So.
Aww. Thank you, everyone who writes to us and tweets us and, of course, supports us as members of It's a Thing at patreon.com/It's a Thing. If you would care to join them, you can get access to cool stuff like our Discord, an ad-free RSS feed, and a little bit of bonus content here and there, too. Yeah, usually it's me ranting about Apple products.
You can also email us your things to feedback@itsathing.me.
And we will talk to you again next time.
Yes.
Thanks, audience. You're the best.
Please keep that up. I don't need no man speaking lies.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate travel shoes from Allbirds, like the breathable, silky smooth tree dasher, the responsive foam and extra grip of the tree runner, or the classic low top look of the tree piper. Allbirds has a lightweight, ultra-packable shoe ready for whatever adventures you have planned. Boarding pass? Check. Passport? Check. The perfect travel shoe? Check. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.